this morning. So at a young age, a boy named Danny had an amazing talent in the game of baseball. I'm not sure if anyone knows or have ever watched baseball, but growing up in the States, you learn how to play baseball. And there was this boy named Danny, and he had an amazing talent. He was a pitcher, with like a bowler, if you cricket, for an under-14s team in the Little League. He lived in New York City, and Danny's talents carried his team to the championship for that league, and they won. He was phenomenal. He became the first pitcher to throw a perfect game in over 20 years. Now, a perfect game means when you're bowling or pitching, there's no hits, no one gets on base, you basically throw all the balls and everyone is out. Everyone you face gets out. The perfect game. He put up some amazing stats, and he was given prestigious nicknames, and stories were beginning to be written about him. People began to wonder, who is this child? Who is this boy? Where did he come from? And the more they got to know about who Danny was, the more doubts became clear. That was he really under 14? And after a bit of an investigation, they found out that Danny was not 14 years old, but actually he was 16. He was a fraud. He was lying about who he was. See, Danny and his team were trying to get the glory, well, probably not his team, but he was trying to get glory the wrong way. He didn't do it properly. Others thought they knew who he was, but in reality, he wasn't who he said he was. He was too old for the league that we're playing in, and a lot of people got hurt because they had to forfeit all of these games and all the championships they had won. They had to give them back. Now, why do I bring this up today? In Jesus' day, they had religious leaders. They had their own idea of what religion should be. They had their own idea of what the system in place needs to be in order to speak and get to God. They thought that they had the right way. And though they lived 2,000 years ago, and the mindset they had is actually quite similar to what we have sometimes in our churches, in our societies, in our neighborhoods, and in our workplaces today. This is how we do things around here, is usually the statement. Or the opposite way, we've never done it that way before. This is how we do it. Many times we can get engrossed into our way that we're blinded of the things around us. Religious leaders had benchmarks for what it meant to be someone. Okay, and what was pleasing to God. Now, this is a major point that Jesus is actually addressing here. We see in chapter 7 in John, if you're familiar with John's gospel, the contents, he's saying, stop judging by appearances and instead judge correctly. Then in chapter 8, he says, stop judging by mere human standards. And then in chapter 9, we see the man who was born blind. The question that they ask Jesus, who sinned to make him born blind? They're looking on only outward appearances to make particular judgments on people. Now, this idea of judging people, judging their spiritual value on outward appearance, is a serious thing, and it actually stifles our spiritual growth. It takes the eyes off of Christ, and it promotes fraudulent Christian life. Why worry? Like, what is worrying is that we begin to find satisfaction. We begin to find how to do life by comparing our Christian life with someone else. That's what it actually begins leading to. We look to other people to find our satisfaction instead of looking to Jesus, who is our good shepherd, for our satisfaction. I would like to encourage us today from John's Gospel, chapter 10, with Jesus' words. Jesus wants to make it clear who he is in our life. He says, I am the shepherd. So I ask us today, do we look to the shepherd for our satisfaction, for our comfort, for our identity? Do we look to Jesus as our leader, as our guide, as our provider, as our source of satisfaction? Or do we look inward to ourselves and look to other people? Maybe we feel we should feel better about ourselves if we go around someone else who seems less than we are. How are we trying to find our personal identity and our satisfaction? But Jesus says, I am your shepherd. So Jesus tells us he is our shepherd in John chapter 10 in these ways. He knows us and we know him. He protects us and he cares for us, and he gives us life and he gives it to us to the fullest. And so I would like to look through John chapter 10 this morning. First thing we want to see in John chapter 10, if we ask the question, how does Jesus tell us or show us that he is our shepherd? Well, first of all, we see in the first part of chapter 10, he knows us and we know him. As we read in verses 1 through 6, if you have your Bibles, it's found on page 1076 in the Bibles that's provided for you. It's page 1076, or if you have your phone or tablet, it's the Gospel of John and chapter 10. So we're going to be looking through the passage as we go through it this morning. But if we look in verses 1 through 6, we see three characters that were given. We have thieves and robbers, we have the shepherd, and we have the sheep. All three characters mentioned here have some type of action that they're doing in this story. First, we have mentioned thieves and robbers. First, verse 1, he says, I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep by the pen, or the sheep by the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a robber. This is telling us that the thief and the robber is one who's deceiving, one who might be sneaky, one who avoids the true way into the sheep pen. He tries to get what he or she wants in their own way. Now, if we look down to verse 5, these verses about sheep, but it's telling us a little bit more about the thieves and the robbers also. We see in verse 5, the sheep will never follow the stranger. I mean, it makes the reader understand that the stranger in the immediate context is referring to the thieves and the robbers, is trying to lead sheep away from where they're meant to be, from where they are in a protected area to be cared for. The sheep still trust the shepherd's voice, but a stranger without the shepherd is, in this context, up to no good. Someone who may come to the pen on the opposite side of the gate might jump the fence or the wall far away from the shepherd, and they try to lure a sheep over to them and take them as their own. Thieves and robbers are only out for their own personal needs and cares and looking to steal from someone else to gain profit. They really doesn't know the sheep, and they don't care anything about the sheep as well. So that's what a thief and a robber is. I mean, we see them in our life today. They just could care less about anyone else than themselves. They could care less about any of the rules, but they jump and they take only what they want. The second character we have mentioned here is the shepherd of the sheep. Look at again in verse 2. We have the man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. Now, I learned this when I was thinking about sheep. I didn't grow up around sheep, but I learned this. In the first century, shepherd would have some type of communal pen. So like they would be out in the middle of the field, and there's one big pen where all the sheep would go into. So the pen would have more than one flock inside this big pen. When a shepherd would come to the pen through the gate, he would call out his sheep. and only his sheep would come running to him. But at the same time, when the shepherd comes to the gate of the pen, calls out his sheep, not only do his sheep run to him, but at the same time, the other sheep run in the opposite direction because they know this is not our shepherd. So his sheep run too, the other sheep run away. The true shepherd of the sheep knows how to come to his sheep. He calls them by the name, and because he knows them, and the sheep know him, and they understand and know his voice, they come to him, and then they follow him out into the pasture. The sheep know him because they know his voice. This is an intimate relationship that a sheep has with the shepherd. The third character we have here are the actual sheep. Now, throughout history, sheep are not known as the smartest animal. But look again in verse 3. The watchman opens the gate for him. The sheep listen to his voice. He calls out his own sheep by name and leads them out. And as he brought out his own, he goes ahead of them. His sheep follow him because they know him. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. See, the sheep only know one thing, their shepherd's voice. They know their shepherd. As mentioned, sheep are not always portrayed as the most smartest animal, but they are smart enough not to follow someone else because they know who their shepherd is. Their life actually depends on their shepherd. I learned this, again, I was talking to someone who grew up on a sheep farm or some type of thing. If a sheep has been shown by their shepherd where her food is, it will always go there for the food. But if the food is moved away, even just a short distance, the sheep could possibly starve because it doesn't know where the food is, because the shepherd never showed them the food. The sheep only follows the one they trust. So the sheep are smart enough to know who their shepherd is. Their actual life depends on what the shepherd does. Sheep have a personal understanding that they know who to follow and they know who not to follow because they know their shepherd's voice. Now there is a personal and intimate relationship between a shepherd and its flock. Only one person can lead their flock. There's only one person a sheep will come to and follow. That's the only one who they know and the one who knows them. The shepherd knows which sheep get scared easily. He knows which ones wander off a bit. He knows which one like to be near his feet all the time. He knows the young, he knows the old, and he cares for them in how they need to be cared for. Now we as individuals, we are viewed as sheep. The Lord is our shepherd. See, the Lord has an intimate relationship with his sheep, with us. He knows you. He knows how you feel. He knows if you wander off a bit, and he knows how to bring you back. He knows if you want to be right by his foot, or he knows how you walk. And so he cares for us individually. Sadly, in our Christian life, we forget that the one who knows us is actually leading us. We stray, we lose focus, and we put ourselves potentially in dangerous places. But the Lord is our shepherd, and he knows us, and we know him. But not only that is the Lord our shepherd, because he knows us and we know him, but also he protects us and he cares for us. Look again. How we see the Lord as our shepherd. He cares for us. In verses 7 through 10, Jesus moves now the hearer, as he tells the story, to see a different angle of what he's trying to say. Jesus says here in verse 7, "Therefore, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All whoever came before me were thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. Thieves only come to kill, steal, and destroy. But I have come that they may have life and have it to the fullest. So we see that Jesus is our shepherd because he knows us. But now we see this aspect. He cares for us and he protects us. As we begin in this part of verse 7, the idea of the gate for the sheep. Now, what Jesus is doing here, he's looking at the same idea, but from a different angle. And it seems that the idea of the gate is no longer the idea of a communal pen, as it were, a big pen of sheep, but it's actually while the sheep and the shepherd are out on a pasture. And so what the shepherd would do when they're out on their journey, if it got dark and they're not able to get back to the communal pen, he would make a makeshift pen. Take some trees or shrubs or whatever it might be and put them around and keep the sheep inside of it. And there's only one opening, and that's where he sits, lays, or stands through the night. The sheep will not go in and out unless they go through the one opening, and he stands there. And what Jesus is saying here is that he is that gate. If you enter through me, you will be protected inside the pen. You will come in and you will go out through me. You come in for protection, you go out to find pasture. This is the language was common understanding of protection. To come in and nurture and food was to go out. We find rest to come in, we go out to find pasture. Jesus saying that the only way you will have protection, the only way that sheep will have nurture and growth is if you come through me. Only through me, Jesus says, you will get these things. Now, throughout the entire passage, we see Jesus is doing a lot of compares and contrast. And so in contrast to thieves and robbers, because thieves and robbers have come into, in verse 10, to steal, kill, and destroy, the opposite, Jesus has come in to give us life for us, which we see in our next point. But through Jesus is saying, if you are my sheep, I am your shepherd. You will know me. I will know you. Today, maybe you feel like your life is wandering. Maybe today you feel like you're alone, vulnerable. Maybe you're seeing yourself in the eyes of someone else, and you find yourself maybe feeling a bit unworthy. John chapter 10, Jesus' words are here for an encouragement to us, because he knows us. He knows you. He knows that we are prone to wander. He knows that we get scared about things happening in our life. He knows when we are hungry. He knows when we are tired. And he knows when we need to be cared for. And he's reminding us not to be fooled by fraudulent or false satisfactions. By false things. We might have a sense of security that I might feel better before God if I do X, Y, or Z. Or if I don't do X, Y, or Z. Where Jesus says, no, just come to me. I know you, and I love you, and I care for you. I am your shepherd. He's our shepherd because he knows us. He's our shepherd because he protects us and he cares for us. But not just those two things. He is our shepherd, not only because of those, because he gives us life. And he gives it to us to the fullest. Now, we live in a world and in a society that likes to trick us to thinking where we can get life. I know many adverts that use the phrase, this is the life. If you have this, this, and this, you will feel life is good. You know, if you want to experience maybe a peaceful life, come buy this product from us that we will give you. Eat this food, drink these drinks, visit these places, do these things, and you will have life to the fullest. Jesus says, I know you. I provide for you. I will give you eternal happiness eternal satisfaction, something that this world cannot give to us. I'm not sure if anyone here has children, but you kind of know if you have a child what makes them tick, as it were. You know what could trigger them into a rage, and you know what will trigger them to do whatever you want them to do, because you have known them most of the time since they were born. You know what makes them angry. You know what makes them happy. In infinite more, that's how God knows us. He knows how to make us happy and satisfied, and he says that he only is found in me. A couple years ago, I heard this quote. If you aim your life at God, you can find happiness. But if you aim your life at getting happiness, you won't get either one of them. Aim your life at God, we can find happiness. But if you aim your life at happiness, you will neither get happiness nor God. See, society tries to sell us a fraud. Jesus says, I am where you will find true life. I am where you will give and find life to the fullest. The world gives us temporary happiness and satisfaction, not fullness. Because in the midst of difficult times in family, who or what is going to give us deep satisfaction? In the midst of potential death in the family, who will give us eternal satisfaction? In the midst of an uncertain job situation, where do we find satisfaction? In the midst of a difficult family life, relationships break down, incurable illnesses, diseases, suffering, where do we find eternal hope and satisfaction? Is it in more money? Will it be in a better job? Will it be in your sports team that wins? Will it be in maybe fame? That won't give us the satisfaction and the joy or being able to deal with true life situations. See, life to the fullest is not always just about being on a high. Life to the fullest is about knowing where our hope lies in the midst of reality. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I don't have to fear because I know who is with me. See, life to the fullest is about our shepherd knowing us, caring for us, protecting us, feeding us in all of life's situation. Life to the fullest is living for a purpose, for someone beyond this world, for something that completely satisfies us both in this life and in the next. That is a full life. It's comforting to know that when we look at an illness in the face and the arms of a loving father is around us, as we lay our head in his arms, life is difficult. Life is tough. But it's much more satisfying than anything that the world can give us as we go through these. The things that we think are so important will not satisfy us in these times. Jesus is our shepherd. He knows us, and we know him. We have that relationship with him. He protects us, he cares for us, and he gives us life, and he gives us life to the fullest. A life that's beyond this one. So Jesus is our shepherd. Look again at verse 11. He says, I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Then how does Jesus show the contrast in verse 12? The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees a wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and he runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and it scatters. The man runs because he's a hired hand and he doesn't care anything. He cares nothing for the sheep. It's like if a security worker in a shopping center if a gang of people come and storming in the store, demanding money, demanding products, with weapons of whatever it might be to steal merchandise, what do you think the security worker is going to do? What? Take it. When I used to work at a bank, and if someone came in, life is more valuable than cash. That's what, you just let them have it, and you let them, because life is more valuable. But you take that same security worker. He's in his own home with his family. A gang of people with weapons come in to storm their home. What will that security worker do? They will fight. He will stand between the harm and the ones that he cares about. But what's the difference? It's the same person, the same people coming at him. He has a relationship with these people. He doesn't have a relationship with things. A hired hand doesn't care about merchandise. But someone cares about their family. Someone cares about their children. See, Jesus is our shepherd. He knows us. He cares for us. We know him. He protects us, cares for us, gives us true life. He has given us everything that we need, and only in him we can find complete and full life, a life that's only satisfied in that relationship with our loving Heavenly Father. Yet how many times do we go through true life fraudulently? Fake. The Christian life is just ticking a box, maybe. I go to church 3-4 times a week. I read this number of Bible. I say something to someone else. What is the Christian life? What is it to us? Is it a real relationship with the one who loves us, cares for us, protects us, and gives us life? The other thing, real quick, as we finish up. I thought this was interesting. I couldn't get this out of my mind when I was studying this. But look at the phrase there. I have other sheep that are not of the sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. I kept reading that and thinking about how true to life is this phrase. We as sheep are following our shepherd, aren't we? I mean, if you think about it, we're following. And we know that Jesus is on a journey, on a mission. He's purposely going places through valleys, over mountains, through the night, in the blazing heat, in the winter, in the to collect his sheep. And so if we stay in the realm of we are sheep with a shepherd, with other sheep, because we're not it's not just us and Jesus. Yeah, he loves us individually, but we're part of a group, right? A few months back, I was in Wales on the cliffs. Yeah, there you go. On the cliffs. And we were walking, and we look up the cliff, and there's one sheep, like, perched. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but perched on the cliff. And I mean, the little ledge it was on, no bigger than my hand. But somehow they got all four of their legs on there. And I don't know how in the world that sheep is ever going to get down. I have no idea, like, if I don't even know if it ever got, you know, rescued or not. But you think about this. There's a shepherd who's gone looking for that sheep, probably. And if that shepherd has a flock of sheep, all of us are walking with our Lord to go find the lost sheep. I couldn't get over it. It was there, helpless, crying out. No sheep around it. It had no way out. If it moved, it fell to the sea. It had to stay. See, we are like that lost sheep once. We were stuck in a hopeless situation, headed for destruction. And aren't we glad that the shepherd came for us? And there are other sheep that were following him when he came to rescue us. The roads when we are following our shepherd might be tough, might be difficult. The roads might not be easy. But who does the sheep continue to trust as they go through their journey? over and over again, they trust the one who knows them, who cares for them, and protects them to give them true life. That's all that sheep know. They know who their shepherd is. And so this morning, I want us to know and be encouraged that the Lord is our shepherd today. So we will go ahead and we will sing our final song, and I'm going to play for us today. The Lord is my shepherd.